The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 8 minutes after 8, happy to take your calls here for a couple, and we just want to dig in things. Dr. Dennis Powers will be joining us, and we're going to visit past and present, and we're going to be talking about, we're going to go up the I-5 corridor, how more of our towns ended up coming to be, how they were founded, all right? We have Wild Sam and Steve. Steve, how you doing this morning? Ham radio on your mind, huh? Go ahead.
Yeah, something fun to talk about, maybe a way, an alternative way of communicating. Anyway, I belong to the Care Ham Radio Club,
yep,
and we have a website, which is Care Ham Radio, carehamradio.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a swap meet this Saturday. The swap meet is going to be at on Summit Street, 930 Summit Avenue, which is the classroom building for, it's the towing repair company, and I'm spacing on their name. Anyway, this weekend is a swap meet.
Okay, what time?
You can bring
in. What time?
At 9 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
So, 2 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, excuse me. And the next weekend at 9 o'clock in the morning, we're going to start another series of classes. And I'd like to give a shout-out to a young man named Orion Raines. He's 9 years old, and he passed his technician's license 3 weeks ago.
Cool. That's great news. I talked with Chris, a guy, Chris, who went there and took his test a few days ago. He bought a power supply from me that I had for sale, and he was going to use it for his ham radio. And he was telling me that that he was going in there, and he got his technician one, too. And now he's studying to get a general class license. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And the club provides the tests for people. We've got a whole computer system all set up, so you do the tests on Chromebooks and
great.
Submit the data to the FCC.
All right, so give the website once again, and then maybe I get a chance to see you on Saturday, okay? I'm going to be giving a talk at the Patriots Conference, but there may be enough time for me to slip in and find a good deal, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Hamradio.com.
All right.
And both things are listed, so if you want to sign up for the classes, you can do it on the website.
All right, very good, Steve. Thanks for the call. Let me go to Jeff. Jeff, you wanted to call back in after Jeff's little talk, Ed's talk on the prescribed burn issue here. You dug through that big 40 minutes worth of reading you were telling me about a few minutes ago, and you found an interesting quote. Go ahead. What'd you find?
It's called Equity and Resilience.
Mm-hmm.
A case study of community resilience to wildfire in Southern Oregon. In considering this shift from management decisions that rely solely on Western science to one that accepts and utilizes local and indigenous knowledge, we must consider the settler colonial reality of our current system. Settler colonialism is ongoing as colonial institutions exercise their power over indigenous communities through policies and practices that harm indigenous SESs.
Whitey's harming Native American. Okay, all right.
Fire suppression, as mandated by federal and state policies, has worked as an engine of colonialism in tandem with the genocide, forced removal, relocation, and efforts to curtail cultural burning and halt the expression of traditional ecological knowledge.
So these are the individuals who wish to continue to put prescribed fire everywhere, huh?
Yes. This is an OSU report.
So apparently putting out fires is colonialism.
I'll let you chew on that the rest of the day, Bill.
Thank you very much.
I got to go be goat, please.
Yeah. In fact, we should dismantle the Medford and Grants Pass fire departments immediately. There's no need for them because putting fires out is imposing colonialism on Native Americans. And that's
just think how much money we could save.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just burn it all. Burn it all. Then they'd be happy. This is the Bill Myers Show.
With your tax refund.
17 after 8, Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law, and Where Past Meets Present. Where Past Meets Present, his latest book, also available at hellgatepress.com. Welcome back, Dennis. Good to hear from you.
Well, always a pleasure, Bill.
All right. Now, Dennis, before we get into some history, I just have to ask you a quick legal question, all right?
Okay.
I'm reading in the Epoch Times over the weekend, Missouri judge finds Communist Chinese Party liable for $24 billion for hoarding COVID-19 protective equipment. $24 billion with a B, all right? Between you and me and several thousand folks, what do you think are the odds that they collect from the Communist Chinese Party? Any thoughts on that?
Slim to none.
Okay. All right. Good. I just wanted to make sure. But hope springs eternal. All right. 24 billion with a B. I don't know. I'm sure that Chairman Xi would say, go ahead, tariff me. And then President Trump did. All right. I like the series when we start talking about how towns were formed here in Southern Oregon. They're always fun. And last week we did Yreka. We're heading up the I-5 corridor over the mountains, and we have dropped down on Interstate 5 into the city of Ashland. And the city of Ashland, it's pretty interesting history there because very sensible people founded that town. Because they didn't find a lot of gold, but they figured there was a lot more money in supplying the gold miners headed over to Gold Hill to play it out, right? What do you say?
Oh, absolutely right. And Yreka was the reason why Ashland was founded. And the reason for that is the fact that the forward-thinking settlers, if you will, had tried their hand at finding the gold by mining in Yreka, because the Thompson's findings were actually, Bill, within a quarter mile of where the town is now located. And what happened was that Abel Hellman and Eber Emery had tried, you know, shoulder to shoulder, mining the gold with 5,000 others at Yreka, and they said, you know, this is not the way to do it.
Yeah, I'm working way too hard and getting way too little money out of this, right?
So what they do is, in 1854, they came up and built a saw and flour mill on a small creek, and actually the creek was Ashton Creek. And then later it became Ashland.
And they call it Ashland, naming it after Ashland County, Ohio, the original
Absolutely.
Home where Hellman came from, right?
Which was the original home of Abel Hellman. And so there are folks here who spend their entire time researching on the history of Ashland, and the names that always come up are going to be Hellman and Eber Emery, and then also another one by the name of John McCall. And John McCall, Bill, was also tried Yreka, and after he had actually, quote, subsisted a good portion of time on just venison alone, two rough winters, he bought an interest in the Ashland Flour Mill. And then over time, Bill, he became not only the owner of the McCall Mercantile in Ashland Plaza, ran the newspaper, the Ashland Tidings, which went for, 170 years before
sure.
it finally went out of business, helped to find and founded the Ashland College and Normal School, which later became SOU. But one of the things, Arthur, my friend, that people really don't know is that Ashland has never been this real big tourist destination over all this time. It was the Chautauqua Festival, which helped quite a bit with Lithia Park in the early 1900s.
Yeah, now, was that during the Great Depression, or was that prior to the Great Depression?
That was prior to the Great Depression.
Okay.
But the key thing, too, was that at the same time you had Medford, but Medford at the time was just a flat area of sagebrush, and no one up until about 30 years later, as far as Ashland was concerned. And then you see what really stood out to me also was that the Natron cutoff was when Ashland suffered economically for years, and that's when the railroad, which came through Medford and Ashland, when that happened and they went up to Klamath Falls, it bypassed Ashland
But in those days, to have the railroad bypass your town, that was a tough deal, wasn't it? That was a big deal. It was almost like saying economic death is your death knell to you, right?
Oh yeah, and that killed off towns, and it made towns. When we get into overtime, let's say Jacksonville. Jacksonville was really desolate, which is the reason why it was able to keep all of these old buildings, because the railroad said, hey, it's too expensive to build to Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. But it really was the OSF and Southern Oregon University over time that really brought Ashland to where it was. But I will, Bill, I'm sure that your listeners probably remember when you go into the 60s and 70s, Ashland was a tough mill town,
mm-hmm.
And what I will never forget is
so it was not the effete coffee drinking. Of course, I love coffee too, but you know, latte sipping kind of I don't know, effete liberalism. It was not that kind of town in those days, right? Kind of like, well, Jacksonville wasn't even that way 30, 40 years ago either, for that matter.
And it really wasn't. But I remember an old time marketing professor. Tom Hitzelberger and Jerry Cooper, when I came in 1992, who told me about 10 years before and 15 years before, they had all these sawmills that were sitting in Ashland. And they said, you know, you didn't have the yuppies, quote unquote, that would head into Omar's,
mm-hmm.
that it was a tough mill town. And then, as a matter of fact, there was a story that I confirmed, which I loved, which was the fact that on Fridays, which was when the mill workers would come in and want to unwind, one logger, if you will, was going ahead and buying drinks for everyone, ran out of money. So what he took was his T-shirt off and wrote down his checkbook number and cashed his T-shirt for $25, which then was cashed to the bank. On that Monday, and I was teaching that one as part of the business law course as to how things change over time. So now we do have the you know, Ashland is home to some 21,000 residents today.
You know, it's kind of hard to imagine that was once a hard mill town, hard scrabble mill town, isn't it?
Oh, it really was. And not only that, in the early 80s, I can remember a friend of mine who had a nice red little sports car that was driving up because, in this case, the family wanted to move up to this area,
mm-hmm.
that his friend was up here saying, on that little red sports car, park it behind the large bulletin board signs, the signs there, because if some of the people see it, they're going to either tow it away or they're going to scratch it.
Oh, really? So there's been a cultural shift over the years there, too. But that's all right. We get that. Viva la difference, you know, as it were. But quite interesting story. But so Medford's orchard boom of the early 1900s, you write here, and the big downtown building spree. And, of course, it ended up becoming the Jackson County town seat, right? We knew that. That brought it to a lot of Providence. Jacksonville tapered off, and Ashland tapered off a bit too, but it ended
the 1920s,
up, yeah, until the 1920s, and then that's when it started kind of its rise to prominence. That's interesting.
Yeah, it with fits and starts because you didn't have the OSF that was started up until actually the mid 1930s, and also with SOU, it really wasn't until after World War II when it was almost closed down. One of the stories that was really quite true was that Elmo Stevenson was sent up to Ashland in 1946 to actually close the campus because its enrollment was around 50. But he thought the setting was unique, and Bill became and started a passionate goal to save it. And it was nip and tuck all the way throughout. So what has interested me is the way things, you know, go in cycles all throughout. And Ashland, only because of OSF and SOU, is this type of draw. But on the other hand, I'm already seeing the signs, you know, where with OSF losing its patrons because of its shift to more of a woke type of presentation rather than what people really want across the country. They're coming into what they think that people would get. And, of course, you follow the money. You wonder about also how money is coming into OSF. And we do know that there's been some large contributors that have come in who have wanted to keep OSF going in the change way that it's been putting on less OSF, Shakespearean plays.
Well, there has been, obviously, there has been a political push within OSF that I think has been very dangerous for the long-term health of that organization to get so deep into politics that for some reason that people, you know, who are going to go visit an OSF play and think they want to go see good Shakespeare play instead are lectured about stolen land and then told why it's very important to cut the genitalia off of young children, you know, as part of the...
Bill, I have some, good friends of mine that I've played bridge with that I've kept up with for years that have never, and I've said this before, never have voted for a Republican or an independent. Mm-hmm. And they were so upset with having to listen to political, and they're paying good money for good seats to listen to politics, and they said, forget it. They've never gone. They've just dropped out. And then you can get into confidential information, I'm sure, with OSF, is that they're just continuing on.
They're doubling down.
As they feel.
They're doubling down. You know, when I went to see Tutinoff, Alexander Tutinoff, a few weeks ago, right? Valentine's Day. It was
wonderful.
Great show. But, of course, since it was at SOU, what did SOU no doubt require before this? Oh, you were on stolen land, and this is time for the conversation about this and that and the other. It's like, okay, well, then give SOU back to the natives if you're that upset about it. But they never go to that, do they? They never go to that point.
You see, the problem is that the administration at SOU is doing a very good job of trying to navigate a state that nationally is looked upon as being headed by a bunch of fools, with the things that come up from the wildfire map that's received negative national news all the way to, where they had to go back on decriminalizing drugs. I mean, and you see the blue state here is one that people are voting with their feet. And as long as you have this supermajority that's up there in Salem, it's as if they don't care.
Yeah, at this point in time. I don't know. Right. Economics may make them care someday. I don't know, Doc, but we'll find out more. But needless to say, it's a really interesting story of Ashland. I'll post that today. And how Ashland was definitely founded by pretty sober folks. And it's so true how often we've heard about people who have made towns and made millions or done really well, not by being the miners, but by supplying the miners, right? That was how... You were much better off to do that, right?
Yeah, and that's what's really interesting because, you know, we see that these individuals who really stand out would have stood out no matter where they were because they decided, wait a minute, there's a better way of doing this rather than going ahead and getting arthritis, you know, when the snows are coming down.
Indeed. All right. We'll talk more here in just a moment. Plenty of ducks to shoot down here. Rhetorically and otherwise, all right? Hang on, Doc. Dr. Dennis Powers, where past meets present. We'll continue with him in just a few minutes. So I was checking the price of gold, and I know the markets are having a pretty rough day, really rough day. Has to do with tariffs, price of oil, energy. Gold and silver is still, they've given back just a tiny bit. Gold's still about $29.10, you know, this morning, still on its way to 3,000 from the looks of it. It is just interesting. And there is a big push. Central banks are buying gold hand over fist. I think this has to do with people are looking for safety. They're looking for, well, gold performing its traditional function, which is to protect wealth and be a monetary source, especially in sketchy times. All right. May not be as exciting in the other boom times, but it's kind of nice to have this right now. Talk to Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers, if you wanted to add to it. Or if you're looking at 2907 and saying, hey, I got scrap gold that I could actually make some money with, go there. They'll weigh it, fair offer. Hey, if you have diamonds and other precious stones within that, they'll give you a fair offer on that too. It's just pure capitalism. Great people, and they've been big supporters of talk radio. Go to Jay Austin today for your gold, silver, platinum, and other precious items and buying or selling at 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, Fortune Reserve. Fontanamedical.com.
Go Your Own Way, a great hit song.
More of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
I have to admit that that commercial kind of becomes an earwig. I don't know what it is about that. You know, I would be willing to bet that whoever wrote that for War, you know, the Lowrider song, probably made more money on that ad than they did when Lowrider came out in the early 1970s, but be that as it may. Hey, Doc, we have John who is here, had a comment on the Ashland conversation that we were having before we move on to present. So, John, you were talking about what happened when the freeway came through and what it took out in Ashland as part of that process. Go ahead.
Yeah, it seemed to have taken out, as wide as the freeway is and all the, when you drive through there, it has very wide shoulders or easement. Mm-hmm. It took out the Ashland Planing Mill. I was, I don't know, early teen.
Yeah, you said plane mill, right? P-L-A-N-E?
Planing mill.
Planing mill, okay, yeah.
And planing mill.
Sure, okay.
And it seems like it took out most of the industrial area of Ashland. But anyway, when I was an early teen, we bought one of the buildings for demolition and disassembled it for our farm.
So you still have parts of the planing mill on your farm today, huh?
Yeah, I think it's some of it's still there.
Well, I'm glad. Well, you see, what you need to do here, John, start a Pottsville down here, okay?
Right.
What do you think? Get some of that equipment. Appreciate the call.
A whole swath through the valley.
Yeah, there you go.
A lot of properties that disappeared that way.
Yeah, and I would imagine though that may have been part of the plan, right?
I don't know, a plan. I think there was, if I understood, there was an actual plan to get the freeway to come through because they realized how a railroad did the same thing. My understanding is that instead of that slide area where Mount Ashland slides off occasionally, the original plan, and it's still on the books, was to go across through White City and out Gulway Gap and come in up at Azalea. And that plan is still in existence to build that freeway for the truck traffic to through truck traffic to bypass.
Yeah, but nobody wanted the freeway to bypass the population centers at that point, John. Appreciate the call, and thanks for making that. Actually, let's hold the calls here for just a little bit because I want to get with Dr. Powers now that we're going to take it back to the present. You know, it might be worth even talking about the founding of I-5 here, how that ended up happening someday. Do we ever talk about that, Doctor?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's an easy one to go into because the effects throughout all of Southern Oregon was one that especially over the pass.
All right.
You had places that were relocated. Of course, you also had the controversy as to whether and where it was supposed to have gone through Medford, which is why, you know, we have two exits, if you will, and it had to do with those that owned wineries versus those that wanted to have it easier to go ahead and have their products picked up.
Doc, let's shift to our focus here to federal government right now, because there are some news over the weekend that I think is worthy of note. And I was reading this on Revolver and Fox Business, various other things, about President Biden's auto pen signature that is on most official documents. And there is talk about wanting to investigate this because the implication being made or the assertion being made is that President Biden wasn't really signing a lot of these executive orders and or pardons. There's all sorts of things that could be done. And that essentially the people in charge of his administration were directing the auto pen. Could you explain the kerfuffle going on here? What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And what's amazing is that we can see President Trump, who is signing every single one of those orders, at least that we're seeing when he's having his press conferences. On the other hand...
Yeah, the big Sharpie. Pulls out the big Sharpie, and then we're hearing this squeak, 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 squeak as he's writing it, right?
And it really would be tough to duplicate that signature.
Well, that's for sure.
At it closely, but Biden, on the other hand, very seldom ever went ahead and signed a bill by his hand. Maybe it was trembling too much and he couldn't do it. But the key thing is that these were all auto-signed. So when we come in to give you an example of where this is coming in legally, is that on all of the pardons that all of a sudden he put out, including a cop killer, and when you
Well, you could also look at the people who might be concerned about this auto pen scandal, including Liz Cheney, other people who were given pardons as part of the January 6th investigation, right?
Absolutely. And the key thing here is that with the auto signatures, and it was relatively few that he ever actually signed, and with his incompetence and proven problems with dementia, is that in different legal proceedings right now, although it has not been reported, of course it never will be, by the drive-by media, is that they're saying he didn't sign it. They're illegal. Because if someone else was putting it through the machine that signs it automatically, like a credit card, that in itself is just saying that we should go ahead and have that thrown out.
What is the controlling authority or controlling law on such a thing? Is the president supposed to sign them himself or herself, if there was a female president? That, in other words, the president has to actually physically sign it, or could the president order the auto pen? Now, I understand the auto pen being used on mass documents and celebratory certificates, things like that that get set out, right? We get that, because it's not a legally binding sort of issue. But shouldn't the executive orders and the pardons be something different? I don't know. How do you see it?
Well, it's going to be a question of proof.
Mm-hmm.
And because legally speaking, all presidents at some point in time have had and have used an auto sign.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is totally to the opposite.
And by the way, auto pen is just literally like a robot signature maker, right, is what it does.
Oh, yeah. Actually, what's really cool is to take a look at some of the images of what it is. And it's just, it's an electronic machine. You just put it in and it signs according to the proof that you put in and automatically signs it that way. So you can just see with hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of pardons, just taking that as an example, you know, you can just see Jill is just feeding it through the electronic auto sign.
Is that how it actually works right now? If you're going to pardon three, how many did he pardon? Wasn't it about 1,500 people, I think, the last count?
Yeah, I think it actually was in two phases.
Yeah.
But it's hundreds upon hundreds all the way through. And the key thing is that his auto pen signature appears on almost all official documents, raising concerns over who controlled the White House, because
if he never really signed anything, then
it's illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if Jill is running it through the electronic machine, it's not being signed by the president. And the key thing here is you just wonder how many that they have been doing, especially given the fact that Obama, Soros, and Jill, according to everything I've come across, were the ones that were running the White House. I might even throw Hunter in there at defense meetings.
Yeah, who really was running the White House? And this is sort of like, Wilson's wife, who ended up essentially running the White House after President Wilson ended up suffering a stroke back in the day, early 1900s?
Yeah, and the thing about it is that we didn't have NBC and ABC and the New York Times.
Yeah, they were able to hide it much better back in those days. Yeah, we didn't have
issue. They were just sitting on their hands, and we all saw it. I mean, every one of us saw the fact that Biden was stumbling. That Biden had to be let off by Obama from a fundraising event. We all saw it, and yet the media, which is corrupt, follow the money.
Do you think that there is a strong possibility that some, if not many, of what Biden purportedly signed, whether it's executive orders or pardons, you think any of those could be legally thrown out, and who would do it?
Oh, absolutely. But the key thing is going to be able to, how can you go ahead and prove it? Mm-hmm. That's the key thing, because, you know, you'd have the chief of staff saying, oh, no, I saw the presidents put it through the machine.
Oh, yeah, well, honestly, what you mean is that they'd circle the wagons then, the Biden administration people on the way out, then they'll circle the wagons and they'll just cover for them. They'll just lie then.
I just can't wait. And you see, that's the game, my friend, because the game, as I see it, is to try to tie up the Justice Department in every single lawsuit you can and tie up Dodge. Because if we get the Justice Department investigating, like Stacey Abrams, I love that. $2
billion. $2 billion, man, I'll tell you.
How do you like that? Because, you know, a year before, it showed $100 in there. And the condition, my friend, on that one was the fact that they had to take a course for 3 months to determine how to make a budget.
All right. I'll tell you what we'll do here, Doc. Let me take another break here, and we'll continue the talk. I want to focus a bit on Doge, especially kind of some of the drama that occurred over the weekend that we're now getting some reports about before we take
sure.
off. All right. Hang on. We'll be right back with Dr. Powers, where past meets present on KMED and 99.3 KBXG. You know, I was telling you earlier, I got my homeowner's insurance that came in, and he said, Mr., We're so sad to let you know this, but yeah, we're going to have to raise your insurance rate $500. Okay. All right. So you know what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be calling 261-5444, and that's Steve's number, by the way, 261-5444. I might change some of my coverage. I think part of it is that I also have, earthquake coverage. But, of course, you know what the insurance company was saying. We're so sorry. You're just going to be incinerated in wildfire smoke, and this is why we're having to raise your rates so much, you know, $500 over last year. But I'll talk with Steve about it. That's the beauty of it. When things change, you get a hold of Steve at Sky Park, an independent insurance agent. He'll go to work on this. He saved me a lot of money on homeowners insurance in the past and car insurance, too, and he does it for many other listeners. In fact, one listener, Robin, was talking about how I ended up saving $1,500 for 6 months over what they've been paying before. It's just astounding. 261-5444, 261-5444. And Steve Yancey at Sky Park Insurance. You can also talk with Lynn if you are turning 65 and you need Medicare insurance questions answered. Her number is 499-0958. SkyParkINS.com.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
Good morning. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED. And you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Dr. Dennis Powers from Past Meets Present. Doc, I was reading the New York Times story about that meeting where the Trump officials ended up clashing with Elon Musk over Doge, and especially Marco Rubio really upset from the sounds of it. And did you read that article by chance? Did you see that story over the weekend?
I didn't read it, but on the other hand, in terms of the New York Times, I did glance through a write-up on it.
Yeah, Trump officials are not denying this either, so I'm pretty sure that this may be pretty good reporting, but... you have fired nobody, Mr. Musk told Mr. Rubio, then scornfully added that perhaps the only person he had fired was a staff member from Doge. And I guess Rubio, privately furious with Musk for weeks, and Mr. Rubio said, what about more than 1,500 State Department officials who took early retirement? Do they not count as layoffs? And he said sarcastically whether Musk wanted him to rehire all those people just so Elon could make a show of firing them again. And I laughed at that. But, you know, point being, the reason I brought this story up there is that when the Doge stories first started getting out there with the emails, saying, hey, respond with your five things that you've done or else we fire you, I had a feeling this was going to go really bad really quickly, and for this reason, and I wanted to get your perspective on it. Because the whole point of President Trump having these good people like Rubio, like Noam, like Kash Patel, and all the rest of these people in here is that they're supposed to go through it and figure it out. And to have Elon cutting them off at the knees before they even get their sea legs there and figure out who needs to be kept and who doesn't is counterproductive to having a good functioning team there for Trump. What would you say to that? And I thought that Doe should have always been advisory, saying, hey, this stuff looks sketchy. You people in the administrative state, Secretary of State, you figure this out and look at it and get back to us. You know, that kind of thing. Wouldn't that have been a smarter way of doing it?
Well, I do feel very, very strongly that what Musk is doing and with the fight that's being done by the far-left radicals, especially the New York Times, because the question is how much money has the New York Times received? I was, Bill, I was using the argument that was more legal, that Biden and Soros were buying advertising with the New York Times.
Well, the way you – well, it's kind of like the book deals and everything else in which people who carry the water get rewarded. Okay, we get that. We understand that. But I'm talking about a matter of policy here that Doge should be advisory. In fact, we were told Doge is advisory. Nobody said Doge was going to all of a sudden send out firing notices. You know what I'm getting at? There's a different kettle of fish, I think, going on here. And I think it's important that good people keep their good people. You know, and they should be the ones deciding this.
Yeah, but I think with all of the facts that have come out as to these good people who weren't even showing up into the office, and before you see, Bill, before we had the ability of having these agency heads going ahead and accepted by Congress that was doing a delay game, the only one who was there to get momentum going was Musk.
So you're thinking that this is just part of the disruptive aspect of it, but I'm just concerned, though, that...
Absolutely.
You know, all right. Now, you look at over the weekend some of the story that Doge says it found $312 million in loans that were given to children during the pandemic, according to this. And so that, I mean, that serious stuff needs to be looked at for sure, like right now, maybe last week.
Also the fact that there's probably $1 trillion that the far left has done everything to stop Musk from even unearthing.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, the key question here was the fact that these people who are now the Department of Defense and Secretary of State and things like this are now just getting to understand who is in their department. They didn't say one word about Musk when Musk was coming in and taking all the heat. And so when we see words like sarcastic and things like this, who knows? Because I don't trust the New York Times. I never have.
Well, but Trump's the administration's not denying this. I'm thinking this is pretty. I have no reason. Occasionally, I have to take them at their word there. It makes sense because I would have predicted this, because you're cutting good people off at the knees if you don't let them make the decisions about their departments rather than someone who is not part of the government making the decision for you. And
my friend, I'll take a slightly different approach on this one, because the people who are now running these agencies didn't even understand the organization charts because there weren't any. And you see, the argument, Bill, that I'm coming up with, I agree that good people have been laid off. But on the other hand, do we look at the fact that some good people were laid off, or a New York Times article, or do we look at the fact that we have ungodly types of decisions made where money was going?
I'm not going to disagree with you whatsoever. My concern, though, is that Trump will not hang on to good people if everybody else is making their decisions. And that's the final thing I got to say on that one, okay? That's all I'm getting at, all right? So anyway.
I'll agree that there will be these types of issues coming up. But, you know, when we look at the overall voting in the polls, we have anywhere from 52 to 55% of all Americans, including Democrats, they're saying go, must go. The far left will do whatever they can to stop wherever the money is going to be coming into their coffers, and that's going to be it. I can't wait, my friend, until the Justice Department heads up with Musk and we start seeing people like Stacey Abrams and such really paying for these kickbacks.
All right. Hey, Doc, I appreciate the call as always. We'll talk next Monday, and you be well, all righty? Thanks so much.
My friend, take care. It's always a pleasure, and you're the best.
Yeah. You too. Dr. Dennis Powers, a retired professor of business law, where past meets present. And you're on the Bill Myers Show.